podcasting from Alexandria, Virginia, just a few miles from Washington, D.C., where we all hope doing what is right the first time is everyone's top priority. This is Software Quality Today, presented by Procellarex, a podcast about the trends and challenges of software quality testing and computerized system validation, and the people who are leading the way. Hear interviews with special guests and news from customers and vendors. I'm your host, Dori Gonzalez-Acevedo, and welcome to today's episode. Welcome to Software Quality Today. I'm your host, Dori Gonzalez-Acevedo. Today, listen to my interview with Sri K. Sri is a practitioner of CSA, risk-based validation approach. He has over 18 years of life science industry experience, and he constantly challenges folks to rethink what and how to do validation. He's been on all sides of the table, navigating different roles in testing, validation, IT, business, and quality. He has a wealth of knowledge in test automation and is a strong advocate for automation of validation activities. He has a passion for building the future of consulting companies and what that looks like in the life science area, and mentors many CSV validation professionals. As always, enjoy our conversation today. All right. Welcome, Sri, to Software Quality Today.
Thank you, Dori. Excited to be here.
It's been a while since we chatted, so it's always nice to be able to catch up, too, while we're doing some of these podcasts.
Yeah.
You've been active in posting and doing some new live LinkedIn stuff. So how is things going? And I would like to know how things going and where you are and how you came to be in this industry.
Okay, great questions. I think it's very exciting times to be in this industry. I think I would start from there. People who are looking to join this side of work in our industry, this is the best time to arrive. And that's the message I've been trying to portray in my, where, you know, I talk to new people or I try to share something on LinkedIn, things like that. I've been in the industry for 18 years and, you know, a lot of the time I felt, you know, as I heard you also in other podcasts, you know, people say, what do you actually do? It's kind of a boring or, you know, doing the same stuff over and over again. I think with the recent CSA guidance coming out, it's exciting time to be in this industry and make really some change, right? I mean, some of us had that in us. We didn't have something to refer to, but now we have something to refer. So go make that change.
Yeah, so it's... I know you and I both have been in the mindset of doing risk-based approach for many, many years, right? But it was a lot of resistance we had had for folks that say, well, is this really going to be accepted or is this going to be okay? And so what are some of your thoughts around the CSA guidance and how does this help that conversation?
It does, right? So I think one of the key aspects is to understand the key players in the game, right? Especially when you talk about validation, you're dealing with three schools of thought. You have a business team, you have an IT team, and then you have the quality team or CSV if it is part of that, right? So my earlier conversations has been like, you know, people wanna see how others are doing, wait and watch, and then implement, or, you know, in large pharma especially, it is like, hey, we have enough resources to do what we were doing in the past, right? We don't need to change anything. We have enough time. We have enough resources. But what they miss is they could allocate their resources to more mission-critical activities if they approach it to their space, right? I think that's the point which is missing. And I've been very vocal about it. And also, you in some cases, it is about doing and showing it, right? So luckily for me, I had the good fortune of doing a lot of automation testing projects before. And once the customer sees that kind of savings, yes, you have to invest a little bit in the upfront, like the first year or so, but then you see the values in the second, third year, and you don't have to keep the same team over and over, right? So that's one of the big savings I've seen. And also these days, as I write and talk to more people, I see a lot of acceptance from, I think, all different angles. Some want to wait and watch, but there are already some use cases coming from the risk-based approach and how each of the customers have been benefited, right? So people have started rating those. And then especially my focus area right now is to work with small and mid-sized pharma. So since, you know, in one way, their disadvantage is an advantage because they don't have the systems building, they don't have the luggage of, you know, doing this in one way. So they're open and right. an open mindset. They are ready to listen to what is happening new. Let's try the new stuff, because their intention is also get to the get the product or the drug to the market as fast as possible.
Right.
So
because they're smaller, they're more nimble, right? And they're given that they're smaller, they're I think. We can make the logical assumption that they're closer to understanding the why the product is what it is, or why the urgency to get things done, right?
Yeah.
Whereas when you get to the big enterprise, you know, organizations, that journey to the end goal is further away and less tangible.
Yeah, I think there's good and bad to it as well, right? So, you know, enough the reality check I had in my career was, you know, I worked for Big Pharma for 15 years, and then I did a lot of different roles, and I wanted to make the change. I thought I can make these kind of changes in a smaller pharma faster, and I can learn faster. Mm-hmm. But some of the challenges remain in small pharma as well, right? You feel when you go to small pharma, you may be working with AI, ML, and all those new stuff. But then I had this reality check in one of my experience where they were still paper-based, right? So there was not even a single tool for doing electronic validation, for example, right? So, I mean, they have their own challenges, but I think from a philosophical standpoint, right, it is easy to have these kind of conversations about risk-based approach, why we are saying this, what kind of benefit you would see. There is a guidance to refer to, and FDA themselves have been more vocal. I think I have seen in the last couple of years about this approach. They're working very closely with the industry. So it's not that the customer is hearing the story from one side, right? Not just as a consultant, you bring that, hey, these are the best practices for industry. They're also seeing that FDA is agreeing to their approach and they themselves are partnering a little more. So I think it's a win-win situation. That's why I'm really excited about what's happening right now.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, one of the things that you mentioned is around the automation, right? And that has the capacity. We have the capacity to be able to change that, the efficiency with a CSA model, right? Mm-hmm. If we truly apply that in the way that it's intended, right?
Right.
And I think there's a hesitancy to do that on a grand scheme because, like, organizations can't have that impact of that change from a business process perspective, right? Because one thing is to say we're going to change the methodology, right? Or refocus that. But then the other part of that is how much training that needs to happen in order for that to be done, right? What are the third parties that interact with us that already know our business processes? And then that has to change the tools and the electronic tools, right? Or that need to be modified according to, like, it's like a ripple effect that, while the upside and benefits could be there, that you had said it was a little push for like automation change. Like typically a major automation practice is a huge push, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That then diminishes over time. I think the similar sort of conundrum I think we're struggling with is how much to invest in doing a better business process from the very beginning, right? Or altering that or changing that. So do you what are some of the things we can communicate to folks about the benefits of moving to a newer approach?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Right. But what I think is it's all in the thinking initially without seeing. Right. That's where they have the fear. Yes, consultants can come and talk about, hey, we have implemented this in this area or this customer and these are the benefits. We can show all those, you know, super good slides to show, but the customer belief would only come when they actually see. So I think the best approach in my experience is, you know, pick a small project, you know, maybe a GXP or a small non-GXP project, right? So there, the amount of validation you do is comparatively a little lesser than, let's say, a critical GXP project, right? So your turnaround time is less. So you could immediately show the benefits, right, in terms of percentages. When you show that, hey, you are using a, let's say, example of a cloud software and a software product vendor has three releases per year, right? So you have a set of regression test cases. Let's say you're not planning to do any enhancements, right? Or a little bit of enhancement, like 10%. So in those cases, if you have a regression suite, today you may be using five testers running those regression sort for a month, every month. So you're basically spending 3 months of your year, five testers engaged, right? And the actual work is nothing but just rerunning the existing scripts. But if you automate, you can reduce the number of testers to, in this example, right, to one tester, and then the execution itself is reduced from, you know, 1 month to a few weeks or a few days, right? Now, the hindrance I have seen in this kind of exercise is more from to be honest, right, from a quality side, right? Because they, in some cases, they are not up to date on the technological advancements, to be fair to them, right? Because not so much of education and training has been focused in that part of the group, or they are busy in, you know, audit and other stuff. But what I have seen is, in my experience, when I worked with the quality team, it's also because they don't have an automation procedure, right? How to do automation. So you may, typically all organizations may have a CSV or a testing procedure, but not automation. So what I did was, we brought the experts from outside and helped write something, and then they could use it for a small pilot project. So we did a small, and then we leveraged that to show across the other organization, show them the benefit, and smaller GXP projects came into picture, and then the bigger GXP. So now, because I still have contacts in those organizations today, and then I still hear from that, you know, a lot of benefits they are reaping from that exercise, which was done like 5 years back. So I think the initial resistance will be there, but I think you need to pick a small project as your case study and, you know, win that confidence. I think your experience from outside may not, you know, may not give them the full confidence to go ahead with that. But if you do that with a smaller one, I think you can still win.
Yeah. Make some interesting points. But Sri, let's circle back around. So how did you even come into this industry? Like, this is not something you go to school for. So what's your journey here?
Yeah, so I did not know anything about validation. So I graduated from a computer science and engineering. So I did a little bit of programming initially for banking sector back in India. So I graduated in India. And then I traveled to Germany for an assignment to do, but it was a pharma company who was doing sample-oriented pipetting, the blood test. So I was writing software for them. And since I was only one in their office in Germany, you know, I had to do some testing around it. And they asked me to do system testing. That's when I get into the testing part of things. And then an opportunity came in the US with a big pharma. And then I came here because they wanted both development and the testing experience. And then the testing organization was part of the quality group that time. And they were starting some validator project. They said, hey, you have testing. You have this process. Learn this process. Embed your testing into that. And, you know, we call it validation. Understand these regulations. You know, study these, right, and follow these approaches. So I did that. And, you know, I came to actually start a testing center of excellence to that customer. I was the first one. And then we grew to more than 100 people over 10 years. So it has been that. But I think I'm an accidental validation person. But eventually what happened was that I started loving the team I was working with. And then it also gave me a lot of opportunity to, as I mentioned before, right? There are three organizations you always work with. You know, you can work with IT team, you can work with the business team, you can also work with the quality. And so these are three pillars of any pharma organization, right? So the exposure you get and the learning you can, if you are willing and open-minded, is tremendous. And what has happened to me was, I was part of a quality organization for a while, then moved to IT side, and then also I was a business lead for a big UI implementation. So I was able to step into those shoes and see how they think, right? So that's when I became a consultant myself, and I was able to think, you know, now my conversations are more accommodating, I would call, because I kind of understand where they come from, right? Why they ask for something, you know, they ask for, so things like that. So there was also the creative side of me, Dory, which always thought, okay, yes, you do validation for 2 years, right? And you keep repeating, right? You just widen. Mm-hmm. Basically, you start with one project, then you're doing 10 projects, but we were not going deep enough. So only I realized this when I came out, started reading this actual FDA validation documents, CSA guidance, or GAM documents. Not many people read. They just pick something from this slide.
I know.
Now, I myself question myself, how did I survive this long in this industry? By not really reading the actual Bible, right? So now that's something which I try to embed into the team, asking them to read. You don't have to read these documents in entirety every day, but as a daily practice, what I do is I read this guidance every day, at least one page every day, because every time you reread it, there is some new person in you which is having a better understanding of what they are trying to say, right? Because FD always says it is their current understanding. They are not that prescriptive. So you can make things out of it and, include
it. That's right. And so the prescriptive part, which is part of why Procellarx is originally is prescription for software quality, because it is an interpretation, right? Even doctors, right?
Exactly.
There's not one set answer. You can ask, various doctors, all skilled within their, but they have different approaches to how to solve a patient's ailments. It's the same thing. Obviously, yes, there are some go-to things in life critical situations where you're going to prescribe something specific, but other things, daily kind of maintenance of health and well-being can be achieved in many, many different ways. Right. And it doesn't work for everybody. Right. So, I like what you're saying, and also taking part of education, and even in a trusted advisor like yourself, right, that knows kind of the basic principles, is doing a daily practice of reaching out and educating yourself, and then seeing how that applies. That is also part of an enriching culture of learning. And so when I hear you say something to the effect of, still, it's not often, I hear this often, right? That the quality team often is the ones that perhaps need some guidance or education or some kind of dialogue, right? It's how to have that dialogue in a learning sort of mindset, right?
Yeah.
It's not that all IT are right, or not all business people are right, or not all quality people are right, right? But how do we have this dialogue, right, where we have different perspectives?
Yeah.
Everyone comes to it from different parts of the organization, or different histories, right? So you were in a pharma and now you're out of
right.
Some do the opposite, some are only ever been in one place or the other, and having not being forced to try on different perspectives really limit our way of thinking. And I think one of the the critical thinking piece that the new GAMP guidance has come out with is important, right? Because I think that that was missing from the original kind of risk-based approach. We said we wanted a risk-based approach, but what did we see in that? We saw a bunch of checklists come out and not getting down to some details.
Right.
And so what do you think the future of this is, given we're in an industry that is typically, again, generalization, but typically slow to do change in these sorts of operational changes that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So what do you see as the future?
Yeah. I mean, as I mentioned before, at least now I see the future is really bright for anyone who is trying to enter this industry. Right. And I'm also not generalizing, right, when I say quality needs, some kind of exposure. I will give you a classic example in my personal life. So I went to meet this. So initially, when I started my career, right, in validation, I used to get these FedEx packages from India, like testers executing the big packets. So I was the validation lead. So my role was to take these packets, take a shuttle, go around the buildings in the campus, and get it to a quality person. So I go to this. So I carry one laptop, right? So I don't have an external monitor at that point of time. So I go to this quality person. He has got two big monitors and well-qualified persons. And I asked him, what are you doing? He said, I'm comparing these documents we just sent as a soft copy, like basically looking from one document to the other and matching it. I said, okay, fine. So when I left the company after 10, 15 years, I went back to this person to say goodbye. He was doing the same. Instead of two, he just had four monitors. He said, yes, my, right? So I felt bad, but I think that's one of the user persona, right? I mean, when you talk about the future, right? I think the IT in that aspect, I believe, again, I'm talking from my experience, not to be generalized, right, has been lucky in way to get exposed to these new technologies, right? Same with business, right? So if they have a legacy system, they may move into cloud. So they are the first ones to start engaging, and the quality typically comes at the last. I think the risk-based approach is one very very good way of getting this quality up in the discussion. And I'll tell you an last example. Recently, when I'm doing this risk-based approach, right, the first thing I do is do a brainstorming session where quality is also involved, and we talked about them, right? Hey, this is a system risk. These are the requirements. These are the impact of product quality, patient safety, and now we categorize. So this exercise we do as a team, including quality. They always have this feeling, at least in my experience, that, hey, you come to me at the last moment, saying that somebody has classified this as high, medium, low, and you are giving me this evidence, I'm not happy about it, right? Or you're giving me only 5 days to do my review. I think at least in my recent experience has been positive, that the organization realized that quality has to be upfront in those discussions. So that's a welcome change, because when we do that, they also get to know the technology, right? So in my example I told before, that person may get to know what the team is trying to do from day one and start putting his or her perspectives, and that could actually give them a better compliance after the end of the day, right? So I think it's a welcome change, and that's one of the reasons I also encourage my friends or whoever reaches to me earlier, as I told you, right? If somebody asks for validation, it's kind of a boring, not people, because as you mentioned, it's a slow, in our industry, is considered slow perceived to other industries, because yes, typically our drug would take anywhere between 10 to 15 years. Yes, pandemic and COVID has changed things a little bit, which is good. And that's where we are going ahead, right? But there are still older ways of doing this. So I think, the perception changing is one of the things we all as a consultant can do, especially that's something which I try to portray in the LinkedIn or try to draw some cartoon just to show that, hey, you can also have fun.
Yeah, so tell us about our cartoon, the cartoons. You're an artist. So tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, I don't call myself an artist. So it's something which I used to do earlier, drawing. And then I started this doing intentionally when I started training my team, because after a while, as you know, it's also part of a leadership style, right? So you see your team doing the same mundane routine stuff and they get bored easily, right? And they also have a question in themselves. Hey, I see all those technological automation, AML happening there. I want to be there, but I'm stuck here, right? A lot of my team members used to feel that. So I used to draw cartoons to show them the evolution of the validation, right? And show them, hey, the future is bright. Things have changed, at least. Yes, the pace of the change is a little slow compared to what you see outside. But the other way to look at it is this industry is really strong, right? It actually doesn't fluctuate that much if you look at the recession or the other things happening across the other industry. So, if you're looking for a stable and secure career, this is a really good industry to be in. You just need to keep an open mind, also try to adapt from outside what you can bring in. But it's a very stable industry.
It is. It's very exciting. And I know that ways in which people learn also matter, right? Yeah. And so I love what you're saying about your team and trying to engage them in different ways. I've been trying to do similar stuff, right? Because over my years of understanding folks, we all have different strengths, right? And so in ways of comprehending information and being able to handle that and our judgments or our unconscious biases that we have, right? And so how to engage our teams in a way that, especially as consultants, right, to elicit more information from our customers, right, so that we can help craft a better end solution or what is the next best thing for those individuals, rather than a cookie cutter sort of way of repeating over and over and over again. But it helps the teams to be able to engage in different ways, whether it's some like the whiteboard, right? And so, and some like listening to things and some like other things. And so knowing who you're working with and trying to reach them in different ways, I think is great.
Yeah, on that topic, I would also, sorry to interrupt, Dori, I would like to ask you in that perspective. I know like you have been an industry leader, you also lead big teams and get to talk. I also listened to you talking about authentic leadership, a while ago. So what are some of your thoughts around that? How do you motivate your own team? Like what are your experiences in that front? I would like to hear that too.
Yeah, so
when I try to do the best I can each and every day is lead by example, right? I think that is the most important thing for me as a leader, as I've grown as a leader, is also to be more confident and comfortable in showing up with my ideas, mm-hmm. right? And so creating the space for my team to be able to share their ideas too. And I'm hoping to record soon in a couple of weeks with some folks about this topic specifically, because I do think that there's some, you know, generational gaps here, right? Mm-hmm. Where in our industry, there are a lot of seasoned veterans that have been doing this for a long time. And I think we need to be curious about what else could be going on. How is that possible? What is the potential there? And really acknowledging that I don't know. I seek to fail every day. I was just talking to one of my consultants this morning about this, like seeking to fail every day really helps me evaluate myself around my imperfections, and I'm not perfect. And so, and what needs to be tweaked or rethought in my learning process, right? So if I'm not thinking about what did I screw up today, I'm not growing.
Yeah.
Right. Like I don't feel like I'm growing as a human. And so I try to do that with my team, giving my team the tools to be able to make decisions within the self-conformed groups, like the true agile sort of methodology the best I can. You know, agile is something from a theoretical perspective I really truly agree with. And it's really hard to do.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, in its purest form, right? So what does that look like, right? Having all stakeholders completely and totally on the same page with all the same skill set and all the, right, to be able to contribute all that. Well, that's unrealistic, right?
Yes.
But that is the ideal agile team, right? So instead, it's getting to know each other's capacities and then what and how to utilize them to the best of their ability. And I know for me, when I'm doing what I do best, I am in that constant flow, right? And that makes not only myself successful and feel fulfilled, but it also motivates those around me. And it's a ripple effect, right?
Yes.
And that's what I kind of call that authentic leadership, right? It's an acronym, you know, really iced tea, I've called, and maybe I'll put this in the show notes, around, you know, from a quality perspective, we need to have trust, education, and accountability,
okay.
Right? From a true quality perspective. And then the iced part is in interconnectedness, empowerment, and a dialectical conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is really important, like having there's no right or wrong. Right. And
yes.
These are all kind of states of being. And then you choose, we're choice makers to figure out what are we going to do with all that?
Yes.
Right. And I think that's what's exciting around the CSA. So I share in some of your enthusiasm around it. I think it's an insurgence to be able to question. It's an insurgence to be able to, you know, break down some historic baggage potentially that doesn't serve us anymore, right? And how do we figure out a way to really create something new,
mm-hmm.
right? And so another thing about Procellex, I was really very intentional around rethink, reshape, and remake, because it's a learning process, right? It really is. It's what works now might not work in a month from now.
Yeah.
And as a compliance and quality kind of person, I can see how that may make one nervous. But if you kind of embrace the fact that we're doing this together,
yes.
right, that we're making these conscious choices to pivot together, then I think it reduces our overall compliance risk, right? And the risk that we have, not only to our product safety and quality, right, but for the overall process.
Yeah,
And I think it makes this. But I think that's one of the learnings out of COVID. But I'm not sure that some of that's sticking. What do you think? What was your takeaways from COVID? And what do you think about them today?
Yeah, I mean, I love the opportunity COVID has given us to work remote. I love it because I have two small children. It has given me so much time to spend with them and also pursue my passions outside of work. So I feel blessed. I've been stuck with COVID a couple of times, but then I think you have to see the positive, right? Yes, we have lost so many lives and a lot of near and dear ones, but it's part of a life, right? I mean, we are all here to go one day. So I'm someone who believes in the positive aspect of things and, take every day as it comes. I also like what you just said about, doing something new every day and also connecting to the, the audience or younger audience, right? If you will. So, for example, you and I have been hearing this CSA for at least 2 years continuously, right? So we ourselves want to get something new, right? So one of the things I did last week was, and everyone has been talking about this ChatGPT and, things like that. So I was trying to think, what is common between CSA and GPT, ChatGPT? I actually wrote a LinkedIn article a couple of days back, and then a lot of people came and said, hey, this is interesting, because there is nothing common between those. But I was just trying to, what I was trying to do is take the interest in people, right? And then, write something related to it so that people can at least read CSA stuff, right? So you don't have to look at CSA from one angle all the time, right? So also for you and me, we also want new things, not just to teach, but also to feel ourselves new things. We also don't want to get bored of doing the same thing. So I think we all have to look outside in ways where we can bring that new ideas into what we do every day. So, and also, some of the things which I also learn and then I try to share with who I interact with, especially my team members, is that, do something outside of work, right? You don't have to spend so much time at work, and then try to do your secondary, the other passions, because when you do that, for example, you play a sports, and right, you bring the leadership skills, some of the team skills you bring to the table. Yeah. So, all this helps.
Yeah, you're right. And so I was asked a couple of days ago about, so what is this with all the women in validation and the DEI stuff you do? And I said, well, that is intimately tied to what I do as a business, as a person, because it's important to me. Yeah. It's part of my value system, right? And so I've worked to be able to align those together back to the authentic leadership, right? Like, I can't not do that. Right. Without the other, right? Yeah. Both have to be present in order for me to fully show up as the leader that I want to be.
Yes.
And so I think that's super important. And that leads me into, I know you've been mentoring folks, and that is also a passion of mine. So tell me, how is that going for you?
Yeah, it's been good. So one of the things I am doing is the LinkedIn audio events. I do that every Monday for 1 hour free event. And sometimes people have asked, come and ask me, hey, why do you do it for free, right? Why don't you create a, training, things like that? And I thought to myself, whatever I have learned in this industry, I have learned on the job. And I got paid for it. Mm-hmm. So why should I, ask someone to pay for something which I share my learnings, which I got paid for it? So I think it's not about the money part of it, but it is more for connecting to other people, because yes, you do work in an organization, or let's say five organizations, but there are still more organizational people who are looking, and you can also learn, right? So in some of my calls, to bring it to perspective, right? Yeah, you have to do things to fail, right? And I didn't know anything about LinkedIn. And sometimes it is just one person all the time. Sometimes it is 10, right? So you have to take things in a stride. But then I just had this experience in my third event, I believe. Like, someone came only in the last 10 minutes, and it was a very fruitful conversation. I had so much learning from that person in the last 10 minutes, because, he had so much of experience implementing this and then sharing a lot of ideas, which I took to the next, event, right? So I think, yeah. So, I know, like, you may be doing the same with your podcast and other events you do as well, right? You pick and choose some of the learnings, and then that helps you, right? The naysayers.
Yeah, because it's a process, yes. Right? Like, and so every conversation informs the next. And so it's very dynamic. And, one of, as my learning is around, and a lot of my, I consider myself a systems person, right? Yeah. And part of that is because of how I grew up in this industry, right? Mm-hmm. Like as a process engineer, a chemical process engineer, developing active pharmaceutical ingredients with no, you know, processes in place, really, it was all on paper. Like we had to make it up. And that process of figuring out the system, like as an organization, in an organization that I was able to affect mm-hmm. all pieces of that because we were small.
Yeah.
Right. And so learning that system dynamic in real time, full hands on. Now that's the type of learner I am. Right. Which may come to someone else by reading a book.
Right.
Right. But for me, it was all hands in for several years of really understanding how those systems and dynamics worked. And I think that was a huge life lesson, you know, that has carried me throughout because our organizations change, they evolve and move, and we need to be able to flow with that. It's interesting. One of my screensavers is one of those 3D, shift-shifting things, right?
Okay.
Like it is like, we're constantly kind of moving and evolving. And I think that that's exciting. It's exciting to me. I get that how that might not be exciting to some folks. And you know, the folks that I know in quality that a lot of this makes them feel uncomfortable is because they really like their boxes, right?
Yeah.
They like the fixed box, where I'm more of a person that I like the Play-Doh box, where you can shape it and shift it and mold it and change it. And one day it's a tree, and the next day it's a boat or whatever.
Yeah.
You
know? No, it's very true, Dori, what you say, because we all have been asked to think outside the box, right? Now, mm-hmm. if you always stuck inside the box, right, there is only so much you can think outside the box. And I realized by experience, right, I was doing all this different stuff, growing and all the stuff. And then one day I realized I was spending like 16, 17 hours at work. Yes, I was helping a lot of people, but then the health was not there. You were not giving enough time to family. And that's one of the things that's why I said COVID has been a blessing, right? And then it kind of gave you that time to think, hey, is this how you want to spend your time here, right? You just got one shot at life. So yes, and then only when I came out of that box and realized so much of opportunities, and there is so much, you know, areas you can grow outside that box.
Yeah.
And we are all, you know, are, I think it's by design, and I've wrote this too, that, you know, mm-hmm. they want you to be inside the box so that you don't, you know, right? So I wrote something about
that's a bigger philosophical, potentially geopolitical conversation than you and I can have maybe off.
But I think somebody needs to talk about it, right?
I do. I absolutely agree with you 100%. That is very, very true.
And I've also seen some examples, right, in my previous experience, to the team mentoring aspect of things. While we were doing some validation projects, I encouraged my team to do certification and other stuff which are not related. Now, what has happened is they asked me, what is the relevance, right? I mean, that's, again, like thinking inside the box and out of the box. I said, it may be helpful to you in the future, right? Like Steve Jobs mm-hmm. said, right, you can only connect the dots backwards.
Yeah.
So what has really happened, like last couple of years, and I also, you know, wrote about this, like I think four of my previous teammates, they got a better jobs in the area which we got trained in that part of time. They came and thanked me. I said, no, it's you actually who did. But, you know, they're seeing it when it happens. So it's the same with the mindset which you are seeing, right? People, you know, want to be there because they feel safe, but only when they get out and get uncomfortable, I think then they will see, you know, they don't have to be in there to get what they want.
So,
right?
Yeah. So you said the magic word. So the other key word for me is uncomfortable,
yeah.
Right? We all need to be more comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Exactly.
And if we are willing, there's a willingness. Like, it doesn't mean that you have to sit in it all the time.
Right.
But there needs to be a willingness to at least entertain the uncomfortable whatever, right? Someone comes to you and say, yep, you know what? We really want to try this different way. Or we want to, you know, take this different approach. And part of that learning needs to happen in order to figure out what is the next best thing, right? So there's an experimentation, and part of that is also, again, a character trait of mine, right? Being
yes.
a scientist, being in that science mindset of let's experiment a little. Let's tweak it. Let's figure it out. Let's try it on. It might not serve everyone right now. And we learn something new and we tweak it and we move on, right? In that sort of agile sort of way.
Right.
And my pitfalls, what I see are folks that are wanting to not change anything because it's always worked, right?
Yeah.
I know, I'm going to use this paperless system, but you know what? I'm still going to push out PDF and I'm going to put it in a document repository, or worse, I'm going to put it over in Iron Mountain. And, and I know where it is, and it's 20 years later and we still like, what?
Yes.
Like, for what added purpose, right? Where is that adding compliance, right? It's not adding compliance. It's looking at things from a extremely risk-based approach.
Yes.
And that's hurting everyone, right? If we were to do that in COVID, right? And that was our stance, where would we have been?
Exactly. So, I mean, sometimes you have to learn the hard way, right? That's another thing I want to connect this to your experiences in the conferences, right? To what you just said. I have not been attending. I mean, I have listened to conference. I have not been attending in person, which I was planning to do very soon. But I know, like, you have been to a lot of conferences, you know, as a speaker yourself. I mean, to the persona which you just explained, have you seen such personas coming to these conferences and also take actions after that? What is your take?
Yeah. There? So that's a great question. So yes. Yeah. We do see, folks with those personas coming out. I think this gets back to my quality T aspect, right? Mm-hmm. It's the accountability. And one of the things that we've been rolling out at ProCellerX are compliance coaching engagements, where we're helping keep customers accountable to their desires each and every month, right? Everyone is overburdened, overworked. Folks are asked to do things that are outside their scope of their day-to-day. Mm-hmm. It's an epidemic, right? We have a problem. And that's not going to change. But what can be helpful is to have outside coaching support to vet through all of what is the biggest priority right now, right? And from a quality perspective, sometimes it's hard to figure that out because what's coming at you is all these asks, right? This has to get done. This has to get done. This can, and no one's there to say, okay, take a deep breath, right?
Yes.
And what is the most critical thing of this list? And what is the severity? And really be able to then reprioritize and help coach those folks in these leadership positions, senior managers and in that sort of level, to be able to say, I hear what you're saying, and we don't need to know about this, but we need to know about these three things.
Yes.
Right. And but having that accountability is not often in organizations on a regular basis. And also having someone as a consultant like you or I doing that with them, with that outside perspective,
yes,
right? And I think that's been a huge change for some of my customers, to be able to know that they can reach out and get a different take on things. How does it's not that they're asking specifically, like, how does this company do this?
Yes.
This is, quality is not proprietary. We're talking about philosophies and changes. It's not that what I'm going to say is going to be exactly what you do, but I'm offering you something,
yes,
to then impact you in some way in which you are either more emboldened by what you already know. Cause most of us have a general sense gut instinct, and that gut instinct most of the time is pretty good, but all the other noise, or, you know, my boss is going to do this, or we're going to lose this, or like all of those things tend to muck up that voice. And so those are some of the exciting things that I'm doing, which I think needs to be embraced, because I think it gets to this deeper conversation, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's also not just at the work, right? So, you know, philosophically, people have to just stop and think. Now, if you're able to prioritize Yeah, because I have seen this. Somebody who is not able to prioritize at work, they cannot also not prioritize at home. Right? If someone is able to do that at home, then they can bring the same experience to work. It doesn't have to be two different lifestyles you have to live. Because if you are able to prioritize and make sure you have time to play with your kids or have a family dinner, right? So those are your priorities. So you take that mindset to your work too. So you have 100 emails to read, but you can still prioritize and then work on the top 5, top 10, right? And make those changes.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested. I follow you on LinkedIn. I love your chats. I love your cartoons. We should do this more often.
Thank you.
And in the show notes, I'll leave links to all your specifics.
Yeah.
And
you're going to embarrass me then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Sri. And I hope we continue this journey. We can also continue this journey in new ways. LinkedIn, like you're playing with new stuff on LinkedIn all the time, which I love. That's great.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I try to explore. And I also was looking forward to spend some quality time with you in kind of doing this kind of conversation. I think we both have been busy. So I'm glad that this happened. And I also thank you for this opportunity. I'm looking forward for future connects. I have not been in person for the conference. I definitely would like to listen to one of your talk in person whenever the next chance is. And also, let's be in touch.
Absolutely. We'll see each other soon.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to Software Quality Today. If you like what you just heard, we hope you pass along our web address, procellarx.co, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts and check us out on LinkedIn at ProcellarX. Join us next time for another edition of Software Quality Today.